welcome to a very special episode here. This is season 2, episode 5. And for some reason, we've decided to do a Tragically Hip only episode. We have our guest here. Welcome, Steve. Oh, I should say welcome to Clifton. He's always here.
Woo!
I don't need to welcome him. He's like, you know.
he's part of the gang.
He is. He's half of the show, right?
I'm always in the back seat there. You can't drop me off.
That's right.
Yeah.
So our guest tonight is our colleague at work, Stephen Cote, who was showing me around his record room, and Clifton and I are very jealous of it. And I would love to come and see it in person, but maybe another day. So welcome, Steve. Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hello.
And we decided the reason that we're doing a special Tragically Hip episode is because...
it's Tom Petty's birthday.
Well, and I couldn't make up my mind.
Well, and actually, I mean, that is true. But also, Clifton was kind of forcing me I was off work for a couple of weeks, so I had some time to think. So he was forcing me to make my picks. And I have one spot left, and I could not pick a Tragically Hip album. And so we decided, you know what? We're the bosses, Clifton and I here. So we're going to make our own damn rules. And what the heck? We'll just do a Tragically Hip episode, and then we're all happy.
Yeah, and this could be part one of 100 down the road.
There should be a hip episode per season.
Yeah, for sure.
Or a Canadian episode per season.
There is no rules on Music for the Quarantine Soul. We've broken every one that we set at the start. There's really just no rules at all. So
I can dig out all my Burton Cummings 45s.
Sure. Yeah, we could do that episode of that someday.
Oh, that'd be great.
So, and actually, I said we needed a reason, but we don't need a reason. But I mean, I guess one of the reasons could be I was looking through some Tragically Hip dates to see if there was an anniversary that we could tie into this. And it was just 3 years ago that Gord Downie passed away, unfortunately, and all of Canada was sad to see him go. October 17th, I think. So we're just over the 3 year anniversary of Gord's passing. So our tribute to Gord and the Tragically Hip. We're going to talk about the first 5 albums and then save the rest for another episode. So Steve.
I kind of looked at this as, this is kind of what you and I related to when I first moved back to Dauphin, was talking about the hip all the time.
Okay.
So I think this is important for the three of us to talk about this, because this is something that, you know, usually when we meet, sometimes, or most cases, the hip comes up.
That is true.
So I think we owe it to the hip, because this is kind of what started it off, and it'll go from there.
Yep. Well, we won't have anything to, we won't be at a loss of words, I'm sure, when we discuss this. So.
Correct.
Okay. So let's start with the very first Tragically Hip release, or the first, I guess you could say, commercial response. Or commercial album, and those of us that are only listening audio, Steve is holding up his. Explain what you got there, Steve.
It's kind of like a promo copy. It's like the first release of the hip, but then it came with a promo card photo, and then it came with 2 inserts from BMG Canada: the Tragically Hip bio and the Tragically Hip. Release.
Okay. And where did you acquire this treasure?
It had been at a record show for 2 years, and the guy kept dropping the price every time. So I had my last, I think I had $40 in my pocket, and I put 20 in one pocket and 20 in the other. And I went up to the guy, I'm like, I got my last $20. And he's like, sold. And I was like, sweet. And I thought it was just the record. And I got home and it had all this stuff in it. And I just scored a jackpot.
Nice. Did you learn that technique from your dad? That $20 in one pocket and 20 in the other?
No, that's the trick that I did at the shows. So you just put half of your money in there. So you knew that you could barter really quickly. Smart.
That sounds like a Brent Cote move. So
taught me well.
That's good.
$20 well spent.
Yeah.
Get it.
So let's talk about the album itself. It's technically an EP, we think, right?
Yeah.
Is there like 8 songs on there? I think 8 or 9.
Yep.
Eight songs.
Yeah. Produced by Ken Greer from Red Rider, Tom Cochran and Red Rider fame.
Cool.
I just found that out the other night. And I have to say that I'm pretty much about 98% sure that they were at the bar at the University of Manitoba circa 1988. And I probably walked right past them.
Didn't go. Not listening to them or anything.
No. Like, I did not attend. In fact, from circa 1988, the campus bar at the University of Manitoba was not well attended at all. There was rarely anybody in there. So, but I'm pretty sure I remember a little bit later, two or three years later, people talking about, yeah, they were played here at the U of M, you know, when they kind of blew up kind of thing. So,
well, in this article that I read, when they were talking about the history of the Hip, I guess they were hard done by. They weren't making a lot of money. And so someone, I think like a journalist, suggested that they should go to Winnipeg.
Oh, yeah.
So they spent like 2 weeks just doing bars. So,
oh, yeah.
And that was in, I think, around 87, 88.
Yeah. So the album itself, we said 8 songs, right? Which is your favorite one off this? You've got one of the singles there, I think, Steve, right?
Yeah, it has to be the best one so far, because they seem to do this. They put all the best tracks at the beginning. Small Town Bring Down is by far the best one on here.
Yeah.
I think so anyways.
Okay. I like Last American Exit, but...
I'm partially Highway Girl.
Oh, yeah. But it definitely sounds like... I had to listen to it the other night, just kind of research a little bit. And you can definitely hear... I think you can hear the promise of the band. Like, it's still kind of rough and garage bandy kind of thing. But you can certainly... I think you can hear that... the promise of what's to come.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the liner notes, or like right here... It says, after thousands of miles on the road and hundreds of nights in clubs in small town Canada, we would like to thank our parents for their patience and our friends and fans for their support. So you can already see that they're somewhat well polished, or they're getting polished before they start their first full album.
Right. And a lot of people, I mean, the casual Hip fan, and even maybe more of the hardcore fans, may not even be aware that this EP exists. I know when Clifton and I were talking about when we did our Tragically Hip tribute night here in Dauphin, is that 4 years ago now, Clifton? We had Kyle Nault over just discussing some logistics for the night, and we were mentioning this album, and he's like, what, there's another one? There's one before that? And we're like, yeah, you don't know that? He's like, are you serious? And he was just so pumped to borrow it and have a listen to this album.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an original of this one too, Cam?
I have the copy that I bought probably in 1989. Yeah, it's on CD. Yep.
Yeah. I wonder how many copies they sold of this record and CD.
Yeah, and mine might be a reissue as well. I didn't dig in enough to sort of decide, find that out. Like, who knows if I'm guessing they probably did some sort of reissue at some point. Mm-hmm.
But well, this EP was released afterwards on an Orange label. So it's like a second press as well.
Okay.
So it must have been pretty popular for it to be re-released. Yeah.
Well, I remember when I picked up, I'm pretty sure I bought this one either after I just bought Up to Here or Road Apples. But I remember buying the two of them together because I thought, well, I'm going to get that one too.
Yeah, that's a good record as well.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that. Yeah. Okay, anything else about the EP? Because there's plenty more to come. There's no doubt about that.
I think what I appreciate the most is just everything was like original lyrics.
Right.
And on here too, it's Gord Sinclair wrote some songs. So it was like a shared interest.
Right.
So it's words by Gord Downie and then music by all the band. So they're really establishing that the group effort in this, a collaboration versus kind of getting apart from the band.
Right. Now, when they were touring then, and I know you wouldn't have seen them in the 80s, Steve, but you know, when they were touring then, the bar scene, the small club scene, were they playing all originals or would they be playing some covers as well?
That's a great question, because I was trying to figure out that well. I can't remember ever seeing them live. And them doing covers.
Yeah, I don't recall that ever either, too. But again, I didn't see them until they were a fair bit bigger.
But I think that's why I like them the most, because I can't remember covers. I just remember their original songs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Pearl Jam closing every night with Bubba O'Reilly by The Who. Yeah. They just cover their own songs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or their hits.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to the second one, which most people think of as the first one, Up to Here, debut studio album. This is September of 1989. I can't say that I remember when it first came out, but there's Steve has several copies he's showing us on video here. Geez, I might have to pick one of those up from you, Steve. Oh, my goodness.
I don't... what? We'll have to see.
Well, come on. What do you need five for?
Listen, we should do a whole hour of the White Album. I've got 42 copies. I know. It's an obsession.
You're nuts, man. Okay, so it considered one of the band's most successful albums, Diamond Status in Canada. It did win the Juno for Most Promising Artists. And, of course, there's the classics, Blow It High Dough, New Orleans, A Sink In, 38 Years Old. And they sound just as good now as they ever have, really. Clifton and I still play. We play New Orleans is Sinking. It's a standard in our set list. And it's kind of one that we pull out. Everybody just knows it, right? We don't even have to sort of think about it. Just play it. So.
Yeah. So it went diamond. Is that the highest diamond status?
I don't know, actually. Over a million copies.
That's a good question.
So if the EP really isn't counted... That's pretty an amazing status to have for their first kind of full record.
Absolutely. Record,
yeah. I didn't know that it was that high.
100,000 copies within its first year in Canada.
Does that say vinyl and CD, or just says like 100,000 units?
I don't know. 100,000 units. It was in 1999 that it sold diamond, got to diamond status. So
wow,
I mean, you'd have to think that by now it's sold a few since then. So
especially with the release of the vinyl too.
Yeah. Now, is that the vinyls that you have, are those original from 1989, or would they be pressings after? They are.
No, they're 100% original. Yeah, they only released them once on vinyl, except places like the UK and Holland like kind of repress them without getting rights. But their original copies, they did make the promo copy I have is from the US. So this is a US copy.
Okay.
With a thinner kind of vinyl. It's not as like higher quality, but it's just the MCA records in the States.
Right.
So it's still like a first press.
They were still trying to, if you want, do you want to spend a minute or two now just talking about the hip in the States and, what's your opinion on that?
My opinion is when I was in Chicago in 2004-5, and the Hip were going to be playing New Year's Eve in Chicago. Oh, yeah. And so a friend and I were looking to see, because they had it posted all over the place. It sold out in like minutes.
Right.
So I think like I'm kind of happy they didn't have giant success. Like even I think the Bare Naked Ladies had a little bit more success than they did in the States, but I'm kind of glad, but because it's our band.
It's our band. It's Canadian band.
Yeah. But they're beloved in the States.
Mm-hmm. In their pockets, right? Like in the areas that they did have success.
Detroit, Buffalo, I heard are big.
Chicago. I think with a lot of Canadians or Canadian celebrities who live in the States, I think around that time in the early 2000s, they were promoting the band, like the Hip.
Yeah.
Because I think where they were playing was at John Belushi's, whatever that blues bar he had.
Yep.
That's where they were playing
House
for
of
New
Blues.
Year's. Yeah. House of Blues, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's not a big place. I've been to that place in Chicago. It is not big at all.
Well, could you imagine seeing the Hip New Year's in Chicago?
Can you imagine?
There's a theory about this that I've read about. The theory is that they are so beloved in Canada that wherever they go in the States, and also up to, I'll tell you a story about that as well, is that the Americans can't get in, because when they play someplace in the States, every Canadian within 200 miles buys up all the tickets.
Smart.
And I'll tell you a story. A friend of mine, Trevor Schwalick, a buddy of mine from Portage, he was playing semi-pro baseball in Australia 1 year, about 1991 or something like that, 92. And he said he went to the hip in a bar in Melbourne or Sydney, I don't recall. And he said he talked to as many people as he could, and every single person he talked to was a Canadian.
Canadian.
So it's an interesting theory, and I think I believe it.
Yeah, that would make
that could be it. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
because that would maybe explain why it they didn't have commercial success in the States, because most of the fans were the Canadian fans going to the concerts.
Yeah,
yeah,
we're buying not, up all the tickets.
We're not letting you have a tragically hip.
Yeah,
here's a neat little note that I found, and it says during this tour, the Seattle band Nirvana, opened for the Tragically Hip in Madison, Wisconsin, on July 7, 1989, to an audience of 40 people.
I saw that, yeah.
Crazy.
Can you imagine being one of those 40 people there? Holy.
Oh, man. Time machine.
Yeah.
So what album is that that was released? Bleach? No.
In 89?
Yeah. It's like...
That would have been even before they had an album, though, right?
Well, they had like an EP, I think,
yeah,
as well.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah. Anyways, let's not. We'll leave Nirvana for another night. But
okay, that's number 68.
So in my quarantine five, this one is in the it is in the running for the last spot. I shouldn't say the last spot, but it's one of the five spots. And I honestly could not decide between these three albums. I could not. I played them all back to back to back, and. I'll tell you, this album is, I had the CD, and of course, back then you burned it onto a cassette. I had a 1981 Monte Carlo with a realistic tape deck, and I played this tape over and over and over, and I've heard, this is one of those albums that I've always listened to from start to finish. There are no fillers here. It is entirely A+ in my mind.
I agree 100%. Like, if Clifton was to ask me which is my favorite song, it's the whole album. I can't say.
It's a great album. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Going back, it was Bleach.
It was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like even the second side, kind of middle of the side ones. Like every time you go, when the weight comes down, Trickle Down is just a fantastic song. Another Midnight. Opiated that they close out with. Clifton and I've played that one as well. I think it's a great album ender. It's kind of your watered down drink, kind of your rye and ginger is a little bit watered down. The ice is kind of melted a little bit. It's got it always makes me think of that.
Well, they start to get in that EP, it's a little bit more heavier, and then they break this album down a little bit and they start to kind of try a few things, and it seemed to really stick and work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like Boots or Hearts is another one that is, I mean, a beloved song here in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Excellent CD.
Now this also about, I did some checking. Now Steve, how many times have you seen The Hip?
Oh, that's a good question. I want to say maybe close to 10 times.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Oh, blew me away.
Yeah, I've only got two Hip concerts on my scorecard.
I've only got one.
Only one?
Yeah, World Container.
Okay. Oh, and we'll get into that in a little bit here, but
Bob Rock produced.
Yeah. I did some checking. I saw these guys. You guys are too young to remember Sunfest at Gimli, probably. But I know you've got a poster, I think, don't you, Steven?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. So I checked. Sunfest started and they played there in 1990 and 91. And maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe I've got three concerts, because I'm pretty sure I looked at the rest of the lineup in 90 and 91 in Gimli, and I'm pretty sure I was there for both of those as well. But I do remember seeing them at Sunfest in Gimli, and it was just fantastic, of course. And they only really had the one album at that point, kind of thing. Certainly in 1999, they only really had the one.
Well, wouldn't they have the five?
In 1990, they would have only had Up to Here and the EP, right?
Well, they would have Road Apples and
not in 1990. Road Apples wasn't released till 1991.
So,
but they probably had some of those songs already in the works, I would think.
They might have been test driving those.
They might have. To be honest, I really don't remember that night very well. It was my buddy Steve and I, we went up and we weren't really sure how good it was going to be, so we didn't bother getting a camping pass, and we slept in his 1984 Toyota Celica. Spent the night sleeping in his car. And, oh, we paid for it the next day.
Did he twist your arm?
He did. We're both a little cheap, so we didn't want to buy that. And we probably didn't have a tent, so we just, we'll sleep in the car. And I think we only stayed the one night, actually. Okay, anything else you guys want to talk about with Up to Here? Because, I mean, we could talk about every song, but, it's good.
Mm-hmm. It's probably out of the five right now, it's probably the number one.
Oh, yeah?
Pretty close, yeah.
I'd have to I got it down to the point where, when I'm trying to pick these three, I had it down to the point where I had to write down how many songs there were and how long the record was. And I thought, okay, if there's a clear, like if I can get an extra two or three songs on one, then I'll pick that one. But they were all within like one song of each and within a minute or so of total time. So it was like, I couldn't even use that as a determining factor. Okay, well, let's move on to 1991's Road Apples, which just the title itself is so Canadian, I think. I don't know if Americans know what a road apple is. I've certainly heard my dad use that expression.
I was trying to segue with Twist Your Arm into
yeah, that was good. That was good. Yeah. Road Apples was the first one to reach number one in Canada, which nobody should be surprised at. Like, I mean, it's hard to believe that none of them, or that all of them didn't go.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you had to pick one song off this one, Steve, which is your...
I got to look at my few copies. Oh. One sealed.
Yeah.
This has never been open. I got... This was $40. This one I paid $80.
Oh, my.
And this one I paid $100 for.
Oh,
what's the difference?
The limited edition is through Columbia House.
Oh.
So they just had this, for some reason, there's just a limited edition up there. Uh-huh. And that was through Columbia House. And then this is just an original release.
Oh.
Would they have been, in 1991, would these have come out on vinyl?
Yes, and as far as I understand, is that the band would have had to pay for the records.
So oh.
They would have had to pay up front. Right. I heard this crazy rumor that there's a pallet of 30,000 copies of Nevermind somewhere in the States because they sent them back and Nirvana paid for them up front.
Oh, wow.
So in most cases, like Pearl Jam, like the Tragically Hip would have said, we're going to release 100,000 units of the CD. And then we're going to pay for usually it was about 10,000 copies. So
oh, yeah.
Maybe being in Canada, it might have been 5,000.
Wow. That
would have been released on vinyl, which isn't a lot.
Yeah.
And you've got 100.
No.
I'll take one off your hands.
I have to go. I'll let you know.
What is the sound quality like on those? Because, I mean, these were recorded with the idea of... A CD, right? Like I've got my original Road Apples CD, but what would the sound quality compare like on a 1991 vinyl compared to a late 70s kind of thing?
I'm not really sure. I guess. I'd have to listen to it.
Okay.
But because I guess right at what in 89 or 90 they had got rid of vinyl altogether.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Right? Is that's when they stopped selling records in the store?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It could have just been, I could care less and let's put out some records, but
yeah. Yeah.
I think in the intentions at that time, they were just, I think the quality was still there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sounded pretty good on cassette tape.
Did it? Funny. Some albums, some songs I can still hear when I hear the song, I still hear the motor of the cassette running. This is not one of them. This was an all CD, version, although I would have listened to this one in my car, my Monte Carlo as well, on that same cassette. I had Up to Here on one side and Road Apples on the other, but I would listen to this an awful lot on CD as well, and it's mm-hmm. I mean and there's some beloved Canadian ones here, Long Time Running, which is the name of the, of course, the documentary, right? That's on here.
That's the song I was going to say was my favorite on this album, because they start to slow it down a little bit where they're not, you know, to really have
driving.
Really nice songs.
Yeah.
Fiddler's Green.
Fiddler's Green. What do you know about that song, Steve?
I don't know much, no.
Oh, okay. Well, I can tell you because I do know that. It was written for Gord Downie's nephew, who died during the writing of this album.
Oh, no.
And they did not play it at all in the 90s or the 2000s because it was still so raw for him. Mm-hmm. But in the final tour, they did pull it out, and that would have been something to see, I think.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So what do you know about the original working title of this album? Apparently it was Saskadelphia. And the record company rejected that because it would confuse listeners.
Even us now.
Saskadelphia. That's what, if the record company did not reject it, that's what this album would have been called.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Does it say?
I don't know. It doesn't. That's why I'm asking.
I don't know.
Maybe we'll never know.
I would like to know, though, if road apples is a Canadian expression, though.
Yeah, it's turd.
Yeah, it's a horse turd, right? But is it a Canadian? It might be a British thing, but yeah.
We should ask Jacques Cousteau.
There's so much, this album, there's so much Canadian reference. And you know what, for a band that's trying to break into the United States, it's crazy how much Canadiana they've got embedded into this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, for example, there's the reference to Tom Thompson and Jacques Cousteau, right? There's the political situation in Sault Ste. Marie as well. Like, it's just, it goes on and on and on, right?
I saw this interview on Much Music, and they were asking Gord Downie where he got a lot of his influence from. And he said most of his songs are just from years of touring on the road. And that's where he comes up with a lot of his stuff. So I think to have that background of Canada and touring for, what at this time, 4 years, 5 years?
Yeah, right.
That he just soaked up all this information.
Which song is it, Clifton, that we did there for the Hip Night that has the Tom Thompson reference?
Three Pistols.
Three Pistols, right. And that was a single, I think, as well, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's funny how, like, you think about the five singles were Little Bones, Three Pistols, Twist My Arm, Long Time Running, which was the fourth single, which, I mean, that one, you would think that that's kind of one that Canadians have embraced, right, is Long Time Running?
Mm-hmm.
And On the Verge, I mean, it's a good song, but I don't know, Born in the Water speaks to me. I like that one. I mean, really any of them. The Last of the Unplugged Gems is another one of those classic, for me, the Hip always seem to finish off their album with that sort of slow kind of wind her down, shut her down for the night kind of song, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what I find for the next couple albums. They do the same thing where they're just, they have that, figured the system and how it worked. And for the next 10 years, they just kind of go with it.
They went with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Even the album cover on Road Apples kind of makes me laugh, you know, just with the horse kind of staring at you there.
It's like, watch out for them road apples.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of thought it was like maybe it looks like a postcard.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know the history behind the cover. Surprisingly, there's not a whole lot on Wikipedia about these albums. And maybe that's because they're Canadian, and us Canadians, we're like, we don't want to share them with the rest of the world. They're our band, and you guys just stay away.
Yeah.
100% agree.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to another classic, the Holy Trinity of Hip albums in my mind, Fully Completely, 1992, six singles, a crazy cool cover art. What do you got, Steve? What can you tell us?
This is one I don't have an original of.
Yeah, that's
I was at a record show in 2011, and I went through the box first, and it was there. And it didn't clue in my head that that was the record.
Oh, okay.
And so then I went back to my table, and this guy leaves with this record. My brother says, "Weren't you just looking in that box?"
Yeah.
I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Did you not see the copy of this in the box?" And I was so mad. I went over and I said, "How much did you sell that copy for?" And he's like, $20.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, man. I don't know. There's a lot of songs on here. I listened to the whole album again today. Like, I listened to all five albums. Yeah. And this is one that, I don't know. I think out of everything else, the first three, I listened to all the time. But oh, this yeah? is one that I didn't listen to a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. There's certainly... this one... I will also agree that this one is of the three, this is probably just a hair below the other two. And I think that's simply because I didn't have this on cassette for my car. and I was in at this point here, this was released in 93. I had moved to Dauphin by this point. Just different things going on in my life, busy with work and volunteering and stuff, and probably just didn't play this as much.
No, but I think at most of the concerts that I'd ever seen, that this album, they probably played the most songs
right
from this album in, like, at the end of concerts.
Okay.
Like Courage and the 100th Meridian.
Yeah.
I think every show that I saw, they probably played that song. And Wheat Kings.
Yeah. A couple points there. Like, the 100th Meridian is literally just yards outside of Dauphin. Like, we are at the 100th Meridian here in Dauphin.
Hmm.
Yeah. It is like, I went out to the, I got the little GPS there, and I went out to the Winnipeg-Osis Highway, Highway 20, and you are bang on within a second of the 100th Meridian on the Winnipeg-Osis Highway.
Maybe Gord Downie was here and he saw that.
I don't know. But I always think of that when he talks about the 100th Meridian, you know, where the Great Plains begin. And it's really a little bit earlier than that. Like, I mean, come on. The Great Plains, it's about the 99th Meridian, but it doesn't quite have the same ring to it.
He was on his way to play the Pine River University.
Maybe. I don't know. For whatever reason, when that song comes on, I always think, you're out by one or two meridians there, Gord. It doesn't quite sound as good. And, of course, Wheat Kings, like, there's another classic Canadiana story. And they wonder why they didn't make it big in the States. Like, I mean, here they are singing about David Milgaard, right? I mean, I would say it's a great Canadian story, but it's certainly a Canadian story, and you can see how some Americans wouldn't relate to that, right?
But I think that's why the songs still stand true, because they're not overkilled. And I think a lot of the things in the States, even at that time and now, it's just so overkilled that you're just sick and tired of talking about it.
Right.
Whereas here, they were telling these kind of stories that have an importance in the song, but then it's not something that was just blown out of proportion. It was just a story that at one particular time.
Right.
So he took it and made it into a popular song without. Yeah.
Even the Bill Barilko song, right? Bill Barilko song. I mean, that's a story that I didn't know as a kid, as a Maple Leafs fan growing up, but certainly know a lot about it now, kind of thing, right? And it's just a great, great little sort of.
Is that that hockey
cap
player?
Yeah, 50 Mission Cap. I couldn't come up with the song title. You know, Cliff, we played that at our Hip Night as well, right? And it's just a great. They play it at Maple Leaf Gardens all the time, over and over again, or at the Air Canada, whatever it's called now. It's not the Air Canada Center anymore. Showing my age here, so. you know, locked in the trunk of a car. There's another one that's about a Canadian. I mean, you could literally do a history class using hip songs, history of Canada with hip songs.
That's a great idea.
That would be very fun.
Are you still teaching that music class, or is that not?
No, I didn't get Steve's referencing. There was a talk of me teaching a class, the history of rock and roll at our school, and we didn't get enough kids signed up for it, unfortunately. So
that's crazy.
Try again next year, yeah.
Courage for Hugh McLennan.
Yeah.
Who's Hugh McLennan?
An author. And there's the thing, like Gord Downie was such, I mean, he's called the Canadian poet, right? Like he's such a well-read and just a real intellectual guy, but able to put it to music and sort of allow the everyman, every person, the ordinary person on the street, that sort of access to these stories.
And as a poet, he was an avid reader of literature.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And so for Hugh McLennan is because of Hugh McLennan's novel, 1959 novel, The Watch That Ends the Night. The lyrics are paraphrased in the final verse from that novel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really need to, I kind of tied up now listening to all these new ones, but I really need to start listening to albums with the lyrics in front of me, I think.
You can do that on Apple Music as well.
Yeah.
Or also, or whatever you choose.
I remember when I first bought this, this one seemed longer. It's got 12 songs on it. But I think it's got a little bit more overall length, but it just kind of, the songs just keep rolling, right? Like Pigeon Camera, there's one that I don't think I've ever heard live, but I love that song. Like it's just a great, great song, right? El Dorado is it's the classic End the Hip album with that kind of slow down End the Night kind of one again.
Lionized. I can't get enough of that one. That's a great film.
Yeah, for sure. And what do you know about the artwork, Steve? Do you know anything about the art?
I think it's from a Dutch artist.
That's correct.
That put it together?
Yep. Yeah. And it was commissioned.
In the reissue, there's a poster
that
comes with
beauty.
The record. So that will have to go on the wall soon.
Yeah. In a frame, of course.
In a frame, yeah.
Yeah. The final artwork was created using a Canon color photocopier. So the guy was just photocopying different images and put it all together, right?
Back then, that must have cost a fortune.
Yeah, probably, yeah. And the Hip bought the original piece. Now the Tragically Hip own it, and it hangs in their studio, the original one.
Cool.
Yeah, that would be something to see, right? That again, I mean, we've talked about this already, right? But I mean, here's this band trying to get into the United States, and they're singing about Jacques Cartier and Bill Barilko and David Milgaard. Like,
but I think it's the way they wrote the way they wrote the songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's different than something like Neil Young, who's so political and is, you know, some of his last couple albums, people in the States hate them.
Okay. It's not accessible enough. Yeah.
But I think this just, the way that they tell the story, regardless if you know who it is, it's a nice song.
Right.
Or, you know, it just.
Yeah. They're geniuses. There's no doubt about it. So at this point here in my life, so Fully Completely was released in 1992. And when they toured this in Canada, this is when the Another Roadside Attraction started. And for people that aren't familiar with that, it was I'll read from Wikipedia, traveling music and art summer festival, which promoted little known bands and traveled across Canada. So I remember going to the very first Roadside Attraction in 1993 at the old Winnipeg Stadium. Midnight Oil out of Australia was the band right before the Hip, and of course they are they're kind of Australia's Hip in a sense, right? Very political, very they talk about Australia, and even Peter Garrett there, the lead singer, he is literally the Australian Gord Downie kind of thing. So I remember that night quite vividly, and it was fantastic.
Who else was on that 93 tour?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm going to have to Google that one up here.
Like, I saw the 97 tour, but I don't think the Hip might have not played that one.
I think you're right, yeah. 93 like, was Midnight Oil, Crash Vegas, Hot House Flowers, and Daniel Lanois.
Wow.
Good lineup, but I mean, as a, you know, I was a 20-something there. I was there for the Hip. There's no doubt about that. But Midnight Oil, I remember being quite impressed with them.
I think I remember seeing an old concert poster with those exact names. So was Rio Statics on the next one then,
Steven? Yeah, that was 95.
In 97, I think, I saw Sheryl Crow, Wilco.
Yeah, that's
Los Lobos.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it was like, they came out like mid, close to the end. And they started off with La Bamba. It was like wild. And it was at the Assiniboine Downs.
Okay.
In the middle of the track. And yeah. It was sick.
Yeah.
Ashley McIsaac, I think, played. Like Wilco had just started. I think it was their first album.
Yeah.
Who would be the American counterpart here? So we've got Midnight Oil, Australian Tragically Hip. Who's the American?
Who is the American Tragically Hip? Wow.
Well, I guess not in sound, but in when you're talking about the landscape.
Yeah.
Would it like be Pearl Jam, maybe?
Oh, I was thinking Bruce Springsteen.
I was gonna go with Springsteen.
Well, I was just thinking Pearl Jam at the time.
At the time, yeah.
Yeah, like kind of relatable and still continuing on. At that time, Bruce was kind of on his own and started to do kind of his own records, I guess.
Yeah, without the E Street Band, yeah.
Yeah, like Philadelphia had just come out, I think.
Would REM be a, like, musically, would they, like, they would sound musically more closer than Bruce does to Tragically. Yeah.
But I think you're right, Clifton. I think if you were to say sort of Beloved, this is our band. I don't know. Do the United States even have that? I mean, because they produce such a vast number of artists for the world.
They do. I mean
do they have that sort of band that they keep to themselves?
Tragically Hip's Canadiana. Like the States has Americana. And there's a ton of artists that fit in that genre.
That fit that genre.
But I don't, like, Bruce Springsteen, I guess, is a good point because I don't think he's ever played, like, maybe Toronto. He doesn't tour lots in Canada.
Okay. He's certainly big enough here. But.
Yeah, I don't think he's played many dates here at all.
I thought, Clifton, you were gonna start to say that the Los Lobos might be the United States Tragically Hip.
Oh, yeah. The lower states.
The lower states, yeah. I've kind of gotten into them a little bit, and actually,
I think Bruce played Saskadelphia,
and he got lost. Actually, talking about Midnight Oil, I spent an evening kind of digging into Midnight Oil a little bit, and I mean, I've heard their one big song there from the late '80s, but they've got some good stuff too. So I have to dig into that someday.
What I read about that another roadside attraction is that they decided not to tour fully completely, but go on to another roadside attraction and then use that to do the album.
Right.
So they didn't even do a tour. They were just kind of like, went along with it, did another roadside attraction, and then sang some of the songs from Fully Completely.
Yeah. Okay, so we've gone through all three, and again, you've heard me say I would consider the last three, up to here, Road Apples and Fully Completely, I would consider those to be the holy triumvirate, the holy trinity of Tragically Hip. But let's move on to Day for Night, which is our last one of the for those viewers at home that are only on audio, which is everyone. Steve is again taunting us by holding up vinyl of his.
I was going to mention we ought to let people know like what we're having to deal with here, because Steven collects vinyl records.
Yeah, I have for many years.
Each album we talk about, start talking about, he pulls up a whole bunch of copies.
All his collection. Yeah, and we'll have to put I'll create a little video trailer.
Yeah. Ooh, that sounds wonderful.
You gotta let me You take one of those off your head.
Yeah,
this clip.
I'm glad I did my hair tonight for this. If we're gonna do a video.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. Okay. This is
probably one of their rarest albums on vinyl.
Okay.
It's very hard to find.
1994. That's not surprising.
$15.
This one I paid 20 for, and 2011.
How do you remember?
This one I paid $300 for.
What?
In Brandon, about 7 years ago. 6 years ago? Something like that, yeah. I've only seen these two copies in the wild.
Oh, really?
Two copies that I own.
Okay, well, I've got $20 in one pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. I should have told you my tricks, Clifton. Yeah. Jeez.
I'm gonna beware of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was the era when I kind of fell away from the hip. I have this on CD. I bought it out of loyalty, but I just never got into it.
And this is one of my favorites.
Yeah, I know you've said that, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's there. Like it's like spending so much time with their craft and they release this and it's so good.
Like even I just look at the track list here and I'm like going, there's only two or three songs that like, if I see the name, okay, I can come up with the jingle in my head kind of thing. Right. I just haven't listened to this and I guess I really need to just sit down and have a good solid listen. Although I did, when we were coming up with the songs for our hip tribute night, Clifton, I did stumble across An Inch an Hour and man, that's a killer track.
Oh, it's a great song. I've read that the promotional tours for this album included stints touring with the Rolling Stones, Page, and Plant.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I got, what year is that? I guess 93, right?
When they were touring.
So then Plant and Page released No Quarter and, mm-hmm. Yeah. I got those two. Those are amazing records.
I got to go and look at which Stones record that was now. That's not Babylon, is it?
It might be that other one with the... what the hell is that called? It's like where Keith Richards sings a song on it.
Silver? No, that's...
Voodoo Lounge, 1994.
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm probably off here by quite a ways.
What do you know, Steve, about, did you watch the Hip when they were on Saturday Night Live back in 95?
I can't remember if I did, but I watched a reclip. I guess when Downey died, they played that episode SNL. Yeah. And I watched that and it was solid.
Yeah. And it was their only appearance, right? On Saturday Night Live, I think. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. And it was Dan Aykroyd. Yeah, it was Dan Aykroyd who pulled some strings and said, I want this band on. And with his influence there at Saturday Night Live, got them on. Although some people say they maybe should have went back to some of the classics from the previous tracks. And they went with two off the Day for Night album. They went with Grace 2 and Nautical Disaster.
Good choices.
Does it say anything else about them not possibly being able to perform? Because I think it was like last minute.
That I don't know. Although I do know that Downey messed up the one lyric. Instead of singing "I'm fabulously rich," he sang "I'm tragically hip," which may or may not have made people think that's kind of weird. I don't know. He was apparently, his 11-year-old nephew asked him to give him a signal, and he was so worried about doing that right that he screwed up on the lyric.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Now, did they have a different producer on this album? Do you guys know? Was this Daniel Lanois on this album? I'm not sure.
Mark Howard and Mark Vreeken, I think.
Okay. I just asked that because it did. For me, it always sort of seemed to be a change in direction for them. But I know a lot of people, generally that are younger than me, that just love this album, and for me it's not there.
Listen, you should treat yourself to listening to it because it's almost like a reward from their first couple of records. Okay. And then they just kind of put this out there. That's and then more, they go for it for the next.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to get into the next one because we're only going those five.
Yeah.
We'll move on another episode from there. But I will have to sit down, I guess, and listen to this and maybe just sort of get into it. I've been told that it's much darker, and maybe I'll get the lyrics in front of me and maybe that'll change.
Well, out of all their releases, because I guess it's like it was recently like 25 years old, it's like the only hip release right now that they did like a master recording.
Okay.
So I bought this one, and it's like, I guess there's some extra footage and extra songs on it or something.
Oh, okay.
Oh, nice.
But that's vinyl you've got there, right? Yeah.
Correct.
If you do like, you know, if you go like the producer, right? I really like how this guy produced this album. And you want to go and see what other acts he produced. Well, this Mark Howard also produced Bob Dylan, Tom Waits. Yeah. Peter Gabriel, R.E.M., Neil Young. And here's a nice little, you know, catch between them touring this album with the Rolling Stones. Mark Howard also produced Marianne Faithful.
Okay. Mm.
It says that it was recorded at Kingsway Studio, New Orleans, L.A.
Okay.
Nice.
So maybe they were going for more polished sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even the critical reception was kind of a little bit on the meh side, but their talk here about this article that I'm looking at here talks about how it's they've kind of moved on from being a rock and roll band and that kind of thing. So, and at that point in my life, maybe that's just what I was, or I'd enjoyed those three four albums so much that it just was taking that turn that I wasn't ready for yet.
Maybe you're now ready for this.
Perhaps I'm ready.
Yeah, you're ready for Days for Night. It's
now that I'm older and wiser. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of people out there that'll have their, you know, couple of favorite tracks off this album, but would stop short of listening to the whole
thing.
Album. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a great point because the other three are just right through.
I can listen
to them.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that's what happened. I mean, maybe at some point by this point here, I would have still been doing a lot of driving in a car. I would have had a CD player by this point. And maybe it was just, this is just not a full album that I was going to drive to. And so I just chucked it.
if you were to do, say, in of all the hip songs, in A side, B side,
yeah,
there's a couple of albums that might be total A-side songs, like the first three.
How many songs do I get on the A-side?
Yeah, like if you had to sort it out, like what's an A-side song? What's a B-side song?
Oh, jeez, that's
A-side, B-side. That's another podcast, I think.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah, you know, and they never did a greatest hits record.
Well, actually, you know what they did. There's the Your Favorites album, right? So I was talking to my son at supper that night because when I was still trying to make my list, I said, you know what, Tanner? I said, if I really, really, really had to go into quarantine, I would simply take the Tragically Hip Your Favorites. There's 37 songs on there. That's the one I would take. Yeah. I'd take the Tom Petty box set because I get five albums, and I'd take the Bruce Springsteen box set because I get five albums there too.
I've asked my wife the same thing, and she said, can I take Your Favorites with me?
Yeah.
Well, other people have cheated, so I don't see why you can't.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about here. But that would certainly be, if I was limited, I would take that one, I think. Although I would be disappointed because I haven't compared that list on Your Favorites, but there would be some of the so-called B-sides from those three, the two, three, and four that I would want that are not on that Your Favorites, I'm sure.
What year was that Your Favorites released?
Oh, that's a good question.
Is that the one with like they did a red one and a blue one and it has the little tree?
I think you're right, yeah. Yeah. Christmas Tree, yeah. Two disc compilation album. Mm-hmm. Selected by bands, fans, and then remastered.
That's probably why it's on CD.
Yeah. 7 songs from Fully Completely, 6 from Road Apples, 5 from Phantom Power, 4 from Up to Here, 4 from Day for Night, 2 songs from Trouble at the Hen House, 2 from Music at Work, and so on.
That's great.
Yeah.
I was telling a few people that we were doing this, and Taylor Schmidt,
yeah,
him and I were going back and forth because I said that Phantom Power is my like all-time favorite album. He was like, absolutely not. Trouble in the Hen House.
Oh, and I have that one as well that I bought out of loyalty, but same thing. I just couldn't. I'll have to have another listen, I guess.
See, when they released that on vinyl, they only did 500 copies in the U.S., never in Canada. So any of the copies that are original pressings are only out of 500 from the States.
Okay. Well, I'll have to keep my eye open for those.
I wish. I saw one sealed at that guy's house.
Oh, yeah? Jeez. Mm-hmm. I hope he didn't burn them. Jeez, that would be.
I would believe that he did.
Really?
Yeah, because that's all he ever said. He would eat moldy bread sandwiches. And I was going through $1 million worth of 45s.
Yeah.
And so his whole life was that collection. So I could see it.
Like, that's amazing.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, me too. I would have hated to have seen it, but he could have probably charged a pretty good ticket price for people to see that.
100%. Well, but I think that's just the kind of guy he was.
Yeah.
He was never going to give it to anybody.
Yeah.
You know, those were his children.
His family.
Oh, yeah. He should have Willy Wonka'd it.
Maybe he did. But whoever got it is the luckiest person in the world.
Wow. Good grief. Yeah.
All right. See, you're in quarantine. You're on your island. You've got the 5 albums we've just talked about. In what order do you listen to these albums?
Exactly how they were made from start to finish. That's how I would listen to them.
That's a great response.
That's a good answer.
We get a lot of that. I mean, a lot of people, they'll take it right from the beginning and just go year after year after year.
Yeah. It depends on what they're.
Like, if you were to ask me that about the Rolling Stones, my answer would be totally different. But since the Hip were so, like, their sound just stayed and it just evolved slightly. And it got better and better and better. So, to me, it's like you reward yourself by listening to the beginning and just going right through.
Oh, yeah? I think if I were asked that question, and I'm answering it anyways, I think I would go with the EP. Because it's raw. And then because of my hesitation on Day for Night, I would listen to that again. And then I would just flip a coin on. I would probably listen to them in order, I think.
I'm going to go the other direction and say that I would listen to them in reverse.
Oh.
5 down to 1 and end up opiated.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're going to do that? You're going to pull one song off and... If I get 1 to end, I might have to go with I don't know, the last of the Unplucked Gems. That one just speaks to me at the end. It'd be a toss between Opiated and that one, I think.
All good.
Yeah.
It's just those memories, you know, like I remember when he sang which one was it? What's the one that's sinking? The New Orleans?
Yeah.
New
Orleans
sinking. And it was like getting night out, and he pretended he was smoking with the hot air. And it starts playing, and then he goes, pretends to smoke this cigarette. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
I just think of just the moments that I've seen that band.
Yeah, 10 times. That's I honestly regret. I like I said, I kind of tailed off on the Hip for a while. And then I do remember when World Container came out and they had a single come on, and I was like, holy cow, the Hip are back. Like, this is, yes, the Hip are back. Mm-hmm. And I so wish I had gone to see the Hip in the in the late 2000s, early 2010s, to see them one more time, kind of thing. It's a real regret for me.
Mm-hmm. One of Mel's friends, ex-boyfriend, they'd been broken up for, I don't know, 5-6 years. And it's all I ever did was talk about the hip with this guy.
Yeah.
So 6 or some years later, we get this call from him out of the blue. And he's like, I ended up getting box seats at the opening of the MTS Arena because the hip opened.
Oh, is that right?
They did their first concert there for the new MTS Arena. And he calls us up and he's like, do you want free tickets to the hip? And we were like, unbelievable. And it was like the 26th row on the floor. And he gave us his floor tickets to sit up in the in a box seat.
Oh, yeah.
Like in the... Yeah. Like this with food and fancy drinks.
Wow.
But unbelievable. And he was so nice and I couldn't believe it. And I haven't talked to the guy since. It was just, what a nice thing to do.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay. Well, this has been a great, great idea. You guys, like I said, I had a hard time. I could not make a choice on my three hip for my quarantine five. So now I get a bonus one because I've talked about these three albums. I get like a, I think I'm going to pop in a different. Thanks, awesome. Steve, for sharing your vinyl with us. And we'll look forward to that we come up with. Do we know how many albums they've done?
I look forward to the sales.
Yeah.
What?
How many studio albums?
I got 14.
14.
I think there's eight that we're missing, right?
So we got, well, I either got two more episodes or we've got an extra long one coming up. So,
can't wait.
We will look forward to those as well. So
I might be able to flash one of those Tragically Hip albums on my screen over here.
And when is this?
I don't know. We'll find another reason to talk hip some night. And, but this has been good. It was good for me. I was off work there for a couple of weeks and I needed a distraction because I was feeling kind of down about things. And it was a nice distraction for me to pull out the hip albums and just listen to them to get ready for this. So, and a reminder of how good they were.
Well, let's hope we survive the U.S. elections and then we'll talk.
I think this was a good starting point because I think the three of us, we enjoy music. Mm-hmm. And so I think having something that we can all relate to right now is really good. And then hopefully we can expand on this and I can maybe pick some of my other favorite bands.
Well, you only get five to go to quarantine. So
well, he said,
oh, Rolling. No.
I'm curious to what Rolling Stones you're going to listen to.
Oh, man.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah. Like, if this is an imaginary world right now when I'm not in quarantine yet, I could pick 5,000 records.
We're going to have to start a new podcast, Clifton, just the three of us for something. Just...
Yeah.
Well, but maybe it's like day one of 7,000 days of quarantine, and this is my first day and the first five songs I'm going to listen to are albums in that day. We just keep going.
You're just
going
to quarantine in your basement.
Deal.
Yeah.
And then
we can call it Cam's Monte Carlo.
Oh, I'm gonna put my Monte Carlo up on the webpage. I still have a picture of it here. Kind of regret selling it actually.
That's a good car. And then you need the cassette.
Oh, yeah. With the Radio Shack realistic cassette.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds great. We'll see you guys at work and we'll talk some more hip another night.
Sounds good. Talk to you guys later.
Okay.
Yep.
Bye. See you later. Fellas.
At the 100th meridian.